This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. Today we welcome back John Butler. This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. On today's program, we welcome back John Butler of the John Butler Trio. I had a chance to meet up with John backstage at the Kettle House Amphitheater just outside of Missoula when he brought his trio to Montana for a performance along the Blackfoot River.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm doing good. Great to see you again. We will let listeners know that we are recording this backstage at the Kettle House Amphitheater in Missoula. And as we are recording this in mid-August, you're getting ready to do a float, so we should tell listeners float is coming up.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's not often that one of your backstage perks is that you get to go rafting on an amazing river. What's the name of this river?
That's the Blackfoot River.
The Blackfoot River.
Yes, the river runs through it, the movie. You
know. Yeah. Funny, my favorite river in the world is the Blackwood River in Western Australia, so... It's nice. So I get to go rafting, so that's cool. And you know, that's not something you do every day. And I mean, it's such a beautiful place, and I hear this venue's pretty new. And
it is.
It's like, I looked at the venue this morning, and I was like, this is the dream venue. You know?
Mm-hmm. And as we're recording this in mid-August, just a couple nights ago, you were in Red Rocks. A lot of people have made somewhat of a comparison, though this is a new venue, not quite as big as Red Rocks, but similar kind of vibe as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think... Oh, no, the similarities would just be the beautiful nature of it. Yeah. You know, I mean, the ratios and the
yeah, it's a little
the scales are completely different. And also, it's just the materials.
Yeah.
The rock compared to these trees. But for me, it's I think our music and our fans and what we do together, most importantly, thrives in an environment like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I should tell listeners, we're recording this backstage in John's, we'll call it his green room. It's kind of gray, but...
It's a gray room. Yeah.
Gray room.
So sorry if you hear a whole bunch of work-related noise.
Yeah, that's all right. That's good.
Workplace.
It's johnbutlertrio.com.
That's it.
Is the name of the website. And Home is the most recent recording. John, where I wanted to start is I wanted to go back to Fremantle. Is it Fremantle? Yeah. In Western Australia? Yeah. And this question, actually, I'd open up the Facebook page to suggestions. And this one comes from Kate, who is a fellow Australian, now living in Helena, just around the corner here. Okay. Singer, songwriter, and guitarist. And she suggested just to talk a little bit about Fremantle. And this is in the conversations we've had before. I mean, this is not where you were born, but this is kind of where you started busking on the streets.
Yeah.
And kind of getting your musical voice together. Talk a little bit about what Fremantle.
Yeah, okay, I'll try to fast forward you up to that point to give it a bit of context. So I was born in LA. I moved to Western Australia, a small town called Pinjarra, in 1986 with my dad, who is Australian. And I lived there ever since, or lived in Western Australia ever since. And Pinjarra was about an hour and 15 minutes away from the city, the closest city being Fremantle. Fremantle is one of those places you go to the weekend. There's beautiful markets, lots of Italian cafes serving good coffee, and there's, you know, food markets and buskers, lots of street performers, and it was quite the place to visit on the weekend. It was an occasion. So by the time I turned, you know, 20 and was going to university for fine arts, to get my fine arts degree, to become a teacher, to get my fine arts degree so I could fall back on being an art teacher. I'd started to busk in Fremantle myself. I was always really almost enamored by the great musicians that would play on the street. And once I found open tuning and got massively obsessed to the point where I was bringing my guitar to university more than I was doing my work, I started realizing that I might have a voice for the street. I always wrote songs ever since I was 16, write poetry and songs, but I feel like you have to find a niche when you're a street performer. There's a million and one people singing covers on the sidewalk, and that's cool, and that's great living, and it's also a lot of great songs there. But once I found that I had instrumentals in me, that's what I did. I wrote songs at home, and I played instrumentals on the street. And from the moment I started playing, you know, it was instant. My dream was always to, my idea of success and my definition of success is do what you love and be able to feed yourself doing it. One way or another. The first time I bust, I made $30 in an hour. And my job before that was $9 an hour fruit picking. The job before that was $5 an hour cash in hand doing stained glass in San Diego. The Fremantle markets in particular was like a womb. I was able to go there as a novice, passionate musician into this little marketplace that was indoors, find my little stall and play. And I eventually got kicked out of the Fremantle markets by the manager because the crowds were too big and I was too loud.
If I'd heard that story, I'd forgotten that. That's great.
Yeah, he actually stole my gear. Well, he didn't steal it. He hid it. So I left my gear at the busking pitch. I went to go get lunch. I came back. All my stuff was gone. My tapes, my amp, my guitar, my tapping sticks, all of it. And I went to the manager, who couldn't stand me. I said, my stuff has been stolen. Has anything been handy? He goes, yeah, I got your stuff. I put it here. And I get the hell out. And I got kicked out of the Fremantle markets, which was like being pushed out of the nest. It was... so scary, because all the big players played on out front of the markets, outside. You know, you had to And I was pushed out of the nest, and that's, I ended up on the sidewalks, and that's when it went to the another level.
Yeah.
All micro little steps, very micro, gradual little steps. I think my whole career is a set of those little gradual little steps in a lot of ways, you know?
That's the where your very popular tune, Ocean, came about, correct?
Yeah, that's where it was born, on the street, yeah.
Thank you. John, I wanted to plunge right in and talk about the most recent recording, Home. And I know that this album really, first of all, it's a great sounding work. And I want to reference the Sydney Morning Herald article for some of the information I got. One of the things that this article was saying was that it's kind of more of a personal recording than some of your... In fact, I was kind of amused with the headline. I think it said, protest singer gets more personal or more introspective or something. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, I've always thought of your work as kind of a nice mix between, you know, your political activism as well as more, you know, introspective. Mm. But is that an accurate statement about this album being more personal?
I think it is accurate. You know, to kind of reference what you're saying, you know, the media are always going to, I don't know if the word is distill. I don't know if they even distill very well. But, you know, they're going to take the shiny features, which is like, you know, so I've been very outspoken. And I've written lots of really personal stuff throughout all that. Right. But, you know, people always want to, they take the easiest thing they can grab a hold of and run with it. But this album, you know, and as I go on, I write less protest songs because I find them less interesting. Why do I find them less interesting? I find them less interesting because politics is actually about people, but the complexities and the dualities and the absolute, you know, conflicting nature of the human psyche. And so I am interested more in the human psyche, in the human story, and in the person. I think the war without reflects the war within. Mm-hmm. That's one layer. I took some time off the road, you know, for the first time in a long time. I discovered that I had anxiety, which now I look back, I've had it for years, but it really ramped. And all I can say is when you stop stirring the pond, the scum boils, you know, it comes to the surface sometimes, you know. Sometimes it stills.
Yeah.
But sometimes when you stop running the race, I realized that as I was running frenetically, there were some things I was running from. I didn't even really realize until like I kind of sat still and like, yeah, bam, and that kind of got like sucker punched in a way. So yeah, that created an environment, you know, of just being very tender and very kind of vulnerable and having not to run away from, go around, go under, go over, but go through. Mm-hmm. The feelings and mixed with like wanting to just feel more of the real stories, and that was what was going on for me. Yeah, this album I say was more personal and maybe a little bit more, maybe why people pick up on that a little bit more is because the poetry was probably a little bit more songwriting as opposed to this is what's on my mind, this is a scary time we live in. We need to take the power back. There's a dickhead in power. You know, like, I got sick of writing that way. It's so literal, you know?
Yeah, sure.
You know, as being a songwriter and a player and having interviewed many, a great legend, you know, it's all about how can you say more with less, mm-hmm. you know? And so I'm constantly digging deeper on that, you know?
Yeah.
And I think people were able to pick up more of my emotions because I was actually probably writing a bit better mm-hmm. than I was before. And a little more interested in the heart than I was the machine.
And anxiety is something, it seems like almost if you had to choose between the two, depression is something that you hear more artists talking about.
Yeah, right.
Anxiety, not so much. It almost kind of gets layered underneath where you don't, it's like, oh, anxiety, what are you stressed about? No, that's not stress, it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually
a very natural response mm-hmm. to the world. To ignore your anxiety is actually probably very dangerous because there are very worthy things to be anxious about.
Right.
You know, and some of them, you know, some of them are very simple, very primordial, and that is like being a parent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Being responsible for a life mm-hmm. forever until you die. You know, it's like, sorry, I probably totally just stewarded
that's
your
right,
mic.
That's right, that's right.
We'll you know, but maniacal laugh. But, you know, the times we live in. Mm-hmm. If you weren't getting anxious a little bit about some of the things you watched on the Black Mirror or the TV, so to speak, if you weren't maybe a little bit perplexed, a little anxious about that, maybe go check yourself out a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think it's a natural, you know, it's a natural response to an environment. I think, you know, we're animals that are based on fight or flight, you know, in the most primordial sense. But yeah, it's definitely something that definitely reared itself up. And I've found the more honest I am about it, the more kind of almost redemption I find, the more I connect with other people, I take the poison out of it and get the misinformation out of it. I think we all deal with versions of depression, anxiety, you know, it's a very natural part of being a human. It's a great book by Johan Hari at the moment called Lost Connections. It's all about the epidemic of anxiety and depression, because they're calling cards. There's something not, some unease, some dis-ease in your life. And you have to take those calling cards. Yeah, sometimes you can get completely chemically out of balance. You do need to have a little reboot or restart or something, circuit breaker. But if you keep on ignoring the symptoms, you know, you got to look at your life a little bit. You know, maybe there's something you're doing that maybe, you know, that's going on. For me, touring and being away from, when I first realized the first real glimpses of anxiety, mine presents as being really prickly and kind of grumpy, which is exactly the opposite. You know, it's so ironic, you know, all what I need is love and support and I push everybody away.
Yeah, sure.
And I was really grumpy. I was about to go on tour. Everything started standing out and I was just in a shitty mood. And my wife came. She put on Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong duets. It's our favorite album. That's how we learned to dance together. And she put her arms around me from behind. And I just started bawling my eyes out. And it was the first time I was like, oh, I'm so sad about leaving. Again and again, you know? And that's where it kind of started. You know, I can realize, oh, right. I thought it was the world. I thought the house was too messy. I thought they were being a jerk and this and that. And I realized, oh, no, it's because I'm actually worried about something that's kind of unnatural in a way, a little abnormal, like the leaving your family that much, mm-hmm. at that frequency, you know, yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I actually was going to ask about that because I think it's a beautiful moment, you know.
Oh, and it was. It was.
Be open to it, open to having that happen to you, you know.
Oh, it just happened to me, actually, yeah. And as I said, that was 10 years ago. So once I stopped, and that was just the beginning. Yeah, it definitely crystallized and got a lot more pokier and uncomfortable. But the more I looked at it, the easier it was, rather than looking away.
There are things in this life I would rather not sacrifice. You, girl, I cannot live without. And you know there's no doubt that all our minds lose it. Losing sleep, pray the Lord my soul to keep. I'll get plenty rest when I am dead. Till then, won't you share my bed? All I might lose in you. All I might lose in you. And I don't mind losing money. There's nothing this life owes me. I've been given more than I can receive before. For you there is no receipt, so all our minds lose in you. All our minds lose in you. Thank you. In this life I would rather not sacrifice. You, boy, I cannot live without. And you know there's no doubt. All our minds losing you. All our minds losing you. All our minds losing you.
We'll be back in just a bit with more of our visit with John Butler here on Musicians Spotlight. Welcome back to Musicians Spotlight and our visit with John Butler.
Well, I'm digging around in the sand, lost in the wilderness, just looking for a hand. I've got seed that I must sow. The great mystery up in the sky, looking down upon me with your millions of eyes. Come on, there are things. With religion, I try to make friends, but those 7 days I could not make amends with him. Watch the kingdoms crumble as they grow. Well, I'm just looking for some faith to get me through tomorrow, with just a little grace in this so crazy world we live. Sometimes it's like a life raft, another time slicks like a sieve, don't ask me why. I brought the picks and I got the spades. I got some dynamite, I even brought grenades. Come on, let's dig ourselves into a great big hole. Dig deep enough, maybe we'll reach Beijing. When we arrive, I'll hit the streets and I'll ask for the king. Taking care of business on the south side, so I've been told. And when I see him, I'll say, hey, you, what happened to your blue suede shoes? And can you tell me where I hear all my gold? Cause I'm just looking for some faith to get me through tomorrow. Just a little grace in this crazy world we live. Sometimes it's like a life raft, another time it's leaks like a sieve. And when it all comes crumbling down, heal me, drop an anchor to keep my whistler on the ground.
Sins are all of my doubts and all the fear that corrodes my soul. Not to know I'm a long time dead. My papa said, you make your bed, leave all behind unbroken as you roll on. And then you'll find your
it's like a life wrapped in the time. It sneaks like a souvenir. It all comes crumbling down. Help me drop an anchor to keep my roots there on the ground. In this so crazy world we live, sometimes it's like a life wrapped in the time. It sneaks like a souvenir.
This is John Floridas. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and I'm speaking today with John Butler. I want to remind listeners again, we're backstage at the Kettle House Amphitheater, just outside Missoula, Montana. John, I wanted to talk to you about songwriting, because every time we've had a conversation, we get into songwriting. I like this concept, and again, giving credit where credit's due. I think this was from an interview from E-Town. Mm-hmm. The concept of the song being boss.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
Oh, I think in the beginning, I thought I was the boss. And song served me.
And don't we all?
I want to say something, and damn right, I'll use you to say it.
Yeah.
And more and more, luckily, I've had glimpses of moments where songs have just kind of downloaded very easily, kind of came out of me. I'm like, wow, why does that one feel so much better? Why does that one feel purer? And because there's less of me. And I realized, yeah, you know, I thought, okay, this song's, you know, sometimes, depending on how the song presents, this song's going to be double thumb finger picking and, you know, D minor tuning. I'm going to put a, you know, a dance hall beat to it. It's going to be awesome. And then I'm going to do this and it's going to be great. And then I go to do it and the song goes, no, don't try to dress me. Don't try to put that on me. It's not what I want. It's what you want. And like, and so I'm talking about trying to record songs three or four times and then not feeling right. And the one beautiful thing I'm thankful for is I can feel when it feels wrong. It trusts me enough in a way to where I can go, oh, no, there's something not right. I've released enough songs that I look back on and gone, oh, I shouldn't have released that. It wasn't ready. It wasn't baked.
Oh, really?
I have, that wasn't quite there. Oh, I forced that one out of the wilderness too early.
Uh-huh.
You know, I forced the reins on it and
was
forced
it fully baked maybe?
Yeah, fully baked, you know. I mean, I often relate it to horses as well, you know. Like, I think as songwriters, we're like wranglers. We get to spend a lot of time out in the backcountry. We see things that not many of the population see. We see the wonders and the divinity of the great unknown. We see these beautiful animals, these songs. And we want to show them to people. We come back to town, come and see what I saw. It was God incarnate, you know, whatever that is. And and sometimes you grab a horse and sometimes you just stick a lasso around its neck and drag it into town and look everybody and
yeah,
it's all right. No one wants to see a broken beast though, you know. And but the ones that you go out there and you're out there and you don't try to back it, you coax it in with your skills, whether it's your finger picking or the way you sing or the computer that you used or the beat that, you know, like how does that sound? I want to get on that song. How does it invite the song in so it voluntarily comes with you? Use all your skills as a wrangler to bring it in so it's an unbroken beast, because we've seen enough of those in the zoo, you know, they're not inspiring. and I've released enough of those. So for me, yeah, song is boss, the horse is boss, and whatever I can do, whatever I can do to serve you, song, and make you the best you can, if that means going into my studio that I have with my band that I had and recording it, yes. But the last album, I started it that way and I ended up on the other side of the continent without my band, making it mostly within the computer and my guitar, and just trying to get all the stuff that I heard out in my head, which in all the stuff I heard out in the wilderness, like I had to push almost everybody away so they didn't, their opinions didn't get fettered. So that's what those songs wanted. Maybe the next song wants something different. All I could do is be open and aware enough to hear it and keep myself out of the way. Not let my ego get in the way. Like, oh no, this could be a great song for radio. I'm gonna make them at 3.5 minutes. You know, everybody's doing this nowadays, so I'll do that too. And, you know, like, you know, I'm not. I'm saying I'm not into modern music. I'm totally into modern music, as you could hear on this album. But whatever song wants, if song wants me not to play guitar, like on Home, that's all out of my head. All those things are out of my head, other than the lyrics that I co-wrote with people. That's what that song wanted.
Do you feel that some of that comes from just maturity? One of the interviews I read, you were talking about how some tunes take a while before they're ready to come out. Some, they start to come out and you think they're ready, but they're not quite. And, you know,
yeah.
they kind of come on their own schedule, maybe. Is that?
Yeah, they come on their own schedule. They also, I think you have to be good enough for them, you know, and I think maturity, I think you're spot on, you know, both of us speaking as mature males, you know, like I think, you know, 21, you think you've know everything.
Yeah.
You think you know everything about it all. You know, it comes with the territory. The more you know, the less you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And I found, you know, the songs that I was writing about, like the album is almost prophetic, and a lot of the albums are for me. Like it's like my sixth sense knows what it's about to happen in my life. And then forces me through, you know, and I'm starting to write about it, going, yeah, that's a good topic, or that's interesting, and then I have to go through it, and that, for me, this album is like, you want to write about this stuff? Cool. Well, then you're going to have to live it. You can't imagine it. You can't pretend.
Mm-hmm.
And it forced me through, and I think that's what I'm most thankful about in a more of an esoteric, philosophical way about music, is it's taught me so much about myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, apart from, you know, be able to play this beautiful place tonight. I mean, it's an absolute dream come true to travel the world making music. It's, you know, it's a one in a billion chance, but one more than, a little bit less, more than a billion. But, you know, it's, the odds are, you know, but what it teaches, what it's forced me out of myself, it's made me a healthier person. I smoke less. I eat better. I exercise because, you know, I have to turn up to the songs. The songs demand the best of me. Just like my wife. I have an amazing wife, but she don't want second best, John. You know, hang out the rest of her life and raise children and all the sacrifices and the hard work with, like, you know, number three, John, like, step up. And I think the songs do the same thing. Step up. You want to play me? You want this? Be the best you can. Don't give me half-ass, because I'll embarrass you in front of thousands of people.
You will pay, John Butler.
You will pay, and it won't feel nice.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Or you won't be able to achieve the things you want to achieve. It's like there's like this real, there's a journey. There's like a hero's journey or an alchemic journey, I find. If we, whatever you want to say, really see the underlying meaning of what your journey is, you know?
The choices I've made, and I'm too selfish to change. Feeling this bottomless hole, and it's corroding my soul. And deeper, I dig into madness. This hole in the bookie, it only brings sadness. And running from demons while chasing the angels, and everywhere by
songwriting is, for me, always been a journal entry. It's a way to map my life, a way to understand life, to extrapolate it and go, what's happening? Get under the hood of my life and be able to explore it, and not, you know, and be able to have time to refine it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just, oh, it's not quite right. And they go, oh, that's what I, and sometimes I'm sure you've probably had, you know, you write a song and then a year later you're like, oh, that's what I was trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. Right. Who wrote that? Wow, that's cool. You right. know, oh, this is magic. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is a magic thing.
And you ever have that occasion where, like, the song may be finished, but are you ready to perform it? Are you ready to inhabit it?
Oh, yeah.
To sing it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's a biggie.
I've found that myself.
Yeah, sometimes. Just like, yeah. Call on this album, like, took 13 years to write. I mean, I came up with that riff before Sunrise Over Sea and tried to put a chorus to it and find out where it wanted to live for 13 years. And then when I finally had an iPad and was able to kind of create beats and synths and like create the world around the song was like, oh, cool, you've made the bed for me. Thank you. I'm ready to come down.
Uh-huh.
You know, so like, who would have thought a finger picker who, you know, needed an iPad and, you know, play with a whole bunch of ones and zeros on a touch screen, you know? But mm-hmm. once again, song's boss.
Yeah.
Do whatever you can.
I think that was one that you covered in your podcast, right?
Yeah.
We should let folks know you've got a real nice podcast where you go in depth yeah. with the songs from Mahal
yeah.
and kind of go underneath the hood, so to speak.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
Said sail, yeah, I left my home.
I was quite happy just to be alone. Thought that love was just a waste of time. Till someone there changed my mind. And I said to her, just call. And white, but you color. Dry season in the town of Broome. I found my staircase to the moon.
This is John Floridas. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with John Butler. John, this question came from opening up the Facebook page actually last week, and it's for another interview, but I like this question, so I'm going to ask it of you too. Your most recent blissful moment?
Boulder Creek a few days ago. You know, being in that water at Boulder Creek is... I love fresh water. I'm a fresh water guy. In Australia, we have these things like you either fresh water or salt water. It's like an indigenous kind of terminology. You fresh water, you salt water. And I'm fresh water from day dot. And swimming in that river, it was just gorgeous. And I think also Red Rocks, I'd said yes to Red Rocks in this whole tour before I even had a band, which has to be one of the most scariest things that, well... One of the scariest things I've done. I've done some other scary stuff, but that felt very risky. And I'm going to do a major world tour in front of sometimes tens of thousands of people, and then do my biggest headline that I've done for the last decade. And there's a lot of pressure, and there's a moment of peace where I was like, we are here. Oh, we're doing it. It's okay. Oh my God, there's great people here with us. And there was a bit of bliss there too, where I just felt very thankful.
Mm.
Yeah.
Nice.
You still have to stay on that wave though. You don't want to get too complacent. That wave can throw you off pretty hard.
It's freshwater waves. John, I would be remiss in doing an interview with you and not asking about the garden, because the first interview we ever did, you had this great analogy of a garden and tending to different parts of the garden.
Mm.
And if you didn't tend to all the parts of the garden, that the weeds would come up.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to toss that out to you to talk about the garden of John Butler's life these days.
Well, I mean, it's easy just to get into the tomatoes, or the carrots or whatever it may be, into your, just the career. Into your marriage, your fitness, and they're all really worthy things, but that, just having good tomatoes and the rest of the garden being full of weeds, it's not a good garden. It's just nice tomatoes and questionable garden. So a good garden is maintaining everything, and that's balance. It takes a lot of work and attention to detail in many different aspects. So for me, a successful garden life is having a good marriage, being a good father, being able to live my passions, being able to contribute, being able to be physically healthy, being mentally healthy, having respect but also trust from the people I work with, and you know, walking my talk, and you know, you are your word through action, and all those things. That's several different plants. Several different plants, and they all take a certain different fertilizers, different attention. And meanwhile, life is always, the dualities and the ironies and the hypocrisy of life is always creeping in. Mm. Always creeping in. You know, mental health, you know, working too much, codependency, you know, exercising until you make yourself sick all the time. You know,
injured.
Yeah, injuring. You know, yeah. You know, so you're constantly having to weed and like, hey, adjust. And yeah, life to me is the whole spectrum, you know. My ego, my aspirations, my drive are fairly endless, you know, like what I can imagine. Red Rocks, awesome. Two nights in a row, awesome. Ooh, Madison Square Gardens, one. I just saw Billy Joel play his 100th. 300. I mean, like, you just go. So say I achieve that. But if I have, you know, no respect and no trust from everybody I work with, my kids hate me, I'm totally unhealthy, you know, my wife, you know, can't stand me, I'm miserable. Is that a successful garden? No, it's just you. Yeah, so you can play Madison Square Gardens, big deal. You look. Your gardens needs of attention. Yeah, so,
right. Tomatoes are too big.
Yeah, tomatoes are just like, you know, becoming weeds all on their own, you know? Yeah, right. Which they do, old tomatoes. They're very easy to grow. But anyway, so yeah, life's a garden. Tend it.
JohnButlerTrio.com is the name of John's website. Home is the most recent recording. Great having a chance to talk shop with you again. You're a Musician Spotlight. Thanks so much for making time for us. As I said, you're always very generous with your time. I really very much appreciate it.
And, no worries, man.
It's great to have you on the show. And we want to make sure you get to that float on the Blackfoot.
Yeah, so. Man. Let's get on that wrap. Hey, thank you so much. I always enjoy to get a little deeper and have a nice conversation and ramble on about stuff, and thank you for great questions and your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
No worries, man.
This is John Floridus, and you've been listening to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today has been John Butler. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well as through our own website, musicianspotlight.org. You can also find us online on Facebook and on Twitter. Our program is available as a podcast from those websites as well as through iTunes. Special thanks to Logjam Presents for this interview. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.